B-Pod Studios.
That's an app.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Toronto Maple Leafs, after saying they were intimidated last year in the first two games of the playoffs against the Bruins, are going to come in and win game one. They scored twice in the second period, added on an empty netter here in the third period as the horn sounds. And game one is complete. Your final, the Toronto Maple Leafs 4 and the Boston Bruins 1 in this best of 7 opening round matchup.
All right, it's Agenda-Free Friday. Everything on the board from the weekend, including, or from the week, I should say, heading into the weekend, including last night's wretched Bruins performance in Game 1 against the Leafs. We'll get all back into that with your calls. Agenda-Free Friday is brought to you by Bernardi Auto Group. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life, BernardiAutoGroup.com on the web. Here's Randy and Malden on the Bees. Go ahead, Randy.
How you doing, guys?
Good. What do you got?
Yeah, a question on last night's game. I watched it as much as I could stand, and I shut it off after the first period because I knew they were going to lose anyways. But anyways, the play with Rask, he's just awful. They did stats on him with his lifetime in the playoffs, 35-30 with, two and a half goals against. That, to me, is not even halfway good. It's just above 500. The two goals that he gave up, I could have stopped.
The two goals he gave up, you could have stopped?
The breakaway goal, the penalty shot, he just broke his ankles on because Marner, you know, faked him out of his jock strap. He never even moved.
Randy.
And then the first goal, he never even, I mean, it was granted it was a rebound, but he's out of position.
Okay, let me just stop you. I mean, the first goal was deflected off a body in front, a wicked deflection. It hits the post, and then where the hell is it? He had nothing to do with the first goal. He got undressed on the penalty shot, yes. And the stuff you say about Rask historically, I'm not a huge believer either. He wasn't the story last night. He won the story. I can give you 5, 6, 7 things that went wrong for that team before we get to the goaltending. It's on the list. It's just...
defensively, they were asleep.
I mean...
just asleep, period? The whole team?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that team look that bad in a big game in a long time. I've seen them look overmatched at times, like some of those games against Tampa last year. You say, well, they just don't have the horses. I get it. There's been few games under Cassidy that I've seen that were, I said, were they ready for this one? They were horrible with the puck. Horrible. They couldn't complete a pass. Hardly, it looked like. Their best players got outplayed. The Bergeron line, I'm sorry, got beat by the Tavares line. Beat. And beat by that D pairing that they threw out there, Muzzin and Zaitsev. So Bergeron got beat, and the Bergeron line got beat. Chara looked like he was skating backwards in a bad way. I mean, not skating backwards well like a defenseman should. Skating in sand, in other words. They were They were just stupid with the puck. They looked like, for some reason, they never considered the stretch pass on Toronto's behalf, which is their game. And yet they routinely, even in the first period, when it was 1-1, let the guys sort of get the corner on them, get the edge. I felt that they were, even when they weren't scoring on those plays, there were several instances there where the Leafs sort of...
Yeah, you could feel that dam was going to burst at some point.
Yeah, like they were getting the corner, the football analogy, they got the edge on the Bruins a couple times. I'm like, watch out, they're about to get behind you here. And then in the second period, the floodgates opened, they did get behind them. So I just don't think goaltending was the story last night, which I will say again... you can say is kind of the problem with Rask. He was just sort of there, and he didn't steal you anything. But I don't start with goaltending when I get to that game last night.
I mean, let's just say he goes 3-for-3 on the breakaways.
So, as we mentioned before,
it's a 1-1 game, right? And when I say 3-for-3, I'm saying that would be exceptional. Like that's, but that was the opportunity was there for him to do that, to like, you know, pull a rabbit out of the hat.
If he stops 2 of the 3, it's a different game.
Right, it's 2-1. So to me, that was my issue, because again, the Tavares one was later on. It was already 3-1 at that point, and he saved it. They needed one of the first two, and to me, it was more Nylander than Marner. Marner took him right out of his skates, and that guy's good.
There were 3 breakaways. He stopped one of them, which the league average, and we've looked this up, the shootout average is 29% in the shootout, you know, the thing after the game. Guys score on 29% of their shot league wide. That's the league number. 29% of shootout attempts are good. penalty shots, which occur in the middle of the game, which Marner got last night, convert at just under 35%. So basically, on breakaways, you score one out of three times. That's the league average, one out of three. Rask led up two out of three. So if he just, if he gives you one more there, is it a different game? Maybe. But they did so many other things wrong and looked bad in so many different other areas that I think it's sort of silly to talk about the goaltending.
Yeah, so look, the caller, you know, the caller doesn't like the goalie. You're never going to change a person like that's mine. So, but to that point, name me three guys who played well.
The
Coyle line.
Charlie Coyle, who still didn't score. It didn't mean anything, as usual, but he showed up. He played well. I kind of liked Connor Clifton. I mean, he drew that first penalty.
Right, he helped contribute to that first goal.
At least he was throwing his weight around a little bit there. He had a few giveaways later, made a few mistakes later, but I felt like at least there was tone and something there with the kid early on. And I'm going to stop there.
Okay, but I mean, you know, I would say you could argue Clifton crossed my mind too. You know, he was a minus one in the game, but he was a factor early. He helped contribute to that first goal. Otherwise, it's that Coyle line. It's Heinen and Joe. That's it. There was no one else. There really wasn't. There was no one else.
There is someone who, and I'll tell you this later, I think they're going to have to convene an emergency meeting of the Boston chapter of the Pro Hockey Writers Association, because one of their ranks, I think, broke ranks and put it on Tuca last night. Really stunned to read this. I'll give that to you coming up in a minute. Steve in Taunton on the Celts. What do you got, Steve?
Hey, great show today, guys. Hey, so listen, I'm just chiming in on what you and Gasper talked about early in the show. You know, I've called up many times this year about, you know, Coach Stevens. And I kind of agree with Gasper about not all of that falls on Kyrie. However, Mike, I do agree with you. Maybe it should. And then because I went to the Celtics 76ers Christmas game, and Kyrie just told everybody who was on that court, get the heck out of my way. I'm shooting it, shooting it, shooting it. So maybe it should be on Kyrie. So, Mike, I kind of like your idea.
Well, thanks. I mean, to me, I just like stakes. You know, you play well, lead a team, you get a lot of credit. You don't play well, the team doesn't advance, you get the blame. I do. As Chris would say, I do like it binary. It's just a little simpler that way. Isn't it?
Yeah, but, binary.
But in the NBA,
yeah, I think you added a letter.
The NBA, what is it?
You said binary.
What is it?
Binary.
Huh? It's the same thing.
He doesn't hear the difference.
I don't hear the difference.
Yeah, never mind. Just
you got to give that to me. Binary. Give it to me. Well, I don't get it.
Why? That one was better.
Yeah, but, getting close.
I still don't know the difference.
No, the binary or binary.
Ah,
it's the first one is right.
I see.
The first time you said binary.
Whatever. Either or is what I'm trying to say. But in the NBA, it often is either. It is about your best player. I mean, it is.
Look, it's not about the coach in that league. Now, I understand his point. Like, he was just busting balls for some unknown reason. Gasper was in that kind of mood today. They probably didn't have the handbag he wanted at Saks, for crying out loud. Who the hell knows? He went to buy a man purse and they didn't have it.
You had to wear the Hugo Boss belt today and not the Dolce & Gabbana. I get it.
You get all pissed off.
I get a little snippy when that happens.
Either that or the sale ended yesterday and you got hosed for another 30%. Like, who the hell knows? It was something like that, but he was busting your balls. Well, you say it's 100%. What if I say it's 90? Well, I say it's 90. You say it's 100. Like, all right. Like, we're going to do
this. Yeah, round off.
Keep going.
I don't remember now.
No, it doesn't matter. Mike in Danvers on the Red Sox. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, guys. How are you? Listen, I just want to make a quick point. I think no one's talking about it, but I think the loss of Sandy Leon is a big deal here. Now, granted, I know the guy was only hitting 213 or whatever it was. But this guy at one point last year in 31 games, he was 28-3. He had a WAR of 0.8, which was, I think, eighth in the league.
What does that mean?
The guy calls a great game, and I think they're missing that. I think it's not being talked about. Just want to know what you guys
think. Oh, it's definitely being talked about. We get one a day at least, and you're it today.
It's the first I've heard of it.
Every day we get at least one of those. Sandy Leon. Want to just give your stock answer?
Yeah. So Sandy Leon alone will take the ERA down from 9-3. How is it that there aren't other teams like knocking down the door to go get him then? Like that's, and I'm being a wise ass. the catcher makes it, obviously. The catcher makes a difference. It can. Murray has pointed this out before. Baseball players in particular are colossal pains in the asses. You got to keep them comfortable. Everything's got to be right because otherwise they're like place kickers. Okay, that's what they are. They're like place kickers. But that difference, your money is invested in your pitching staff. So all of a sudden now Chris Sale can't pitch without Sandy Leon or David Price. None of these guys know how to do anything without the training wheels. I can't believe that. I'm sorry.
Greg in Rockland on the B's. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I was calling about changing up and getting rid of Nordstrom and Coleman and putting in Backes and Paul Carey, two guys that are veterans that are willing to throw their bodies around and have heart because they're at the end of their careers.
Paul Carey. I'll give you Backes. I'm not willing to go Paul Carey, especially since I'm not exactly sure who that is. Paul Carey? Backes, maybe. And you got out quick last night, and Backes ain't going to help you bridge that gap. It's going to make the gap bigger. Okay, so just acknowledge that. He ain't going to help the speed quotient. He's going to hurt the speed quotient. But can he deliver a shot that'll change tone? Maybe. And again, I told you, I would take out Nordstrom and not Coolman. Because Coolman has done, and look, I don't love Carson Coolman on that line. I'm not telling you I'm a huge Carson Coolman. I've just seen him do something this year. I've seen him produce in spots with Krejci. It has happened. Nordstrom, I've seen very little from, very little anywhere, wherever he is. I just haven't seen it. So what are you really losing if you take his 9 minutes and give it to Backes on the fourth line? And in those 9 minutes, maybe Backes delivers a shot that gets the building up and changes a little something. That to me is the equation. It's not Carson Coolman.
I don't love the idea of Backes being in this series. I'm not going to lie. Like, I just don't think he can keep up. But given the way Toronto played last night, because to me one of the underrated parts of this game is that Toronto played with some discipline, and particularly in their own zone, there was more traffic in front of the net. Last year, that game one, the Bruins, it was like a scrimmage, for crying out loud. If you remember, the Bruins were doing whatever they wanted in front of the net. It was embarrassing for the Leafs last year. Really, when that line was on the ice, it was embarrassing. Maybe, you know, Backes will fight the traffic in front of the net.
That's a fair point.
He will do that. He'll fight for space.
To me, the lineup question is Cassie going to now in game start mixing and matching, which he did not last night. It was very, again, Claude-like. He just sort of rolled them. And Toronto was putting Tavares up against Bergeron. And furthermore, their two best defensive defensemen, Muzzin and Zaitsev, would go out there against the Bergeron line as well. And they won that matchup. They won it. Tavares and that D pairing won that matchup against your top line, which dominated last year. So that's the biggest difference between last year and this year's. Last year, the Bergeron line did whatever they wanted. Last night, they got beat by the Tavares line. Does Cassie now try and run Bergeron away from Tavares and try and run him off the ice and then run him back on and do that sort of thing and try and dictate that matchup? On the one hand, it would make sense, except I thought the Bergeron line's the best line in hockey. They shouldn't be running from anyone. They should be beating everybody. So you should be always dictating that matchup with that first line and letting, you know, let the opponent throw out who they want because you're better than them. But is he going to do something like that? And that's what I would look for. And if you want to move Coolman down and put Johansson up there with Krejci, maybe. Or again, if Muzzin and Zaitsev are shutting down that first line, give Pasternak to Krejci. And let them go against the Gardeners of the world and those sort of more offensive defensemen that they have down there and see if they can get the matchup down there. Is Cassie going to do something like that? He did nothing like that last night.
I mean, that's what I would do is if the Leafs are going to key on that first line, I would move Pasternak. And I keep saying game one. It was game two last year. The Bruins scored seven goals. Seven, and Pasternak had a hat trick. That's the one I remember.
Okay, back with more of your thoughts right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And here's Mitch Marner going from left to right. Right-handed shot. Gathers some speed and collects the puck and moves to the left wing side of the blue line. Cuts to the middle. Deeks shoots and scores! He took Rask down and his jockstrap is in the corner of the rink.
I'm not going to put any of this on Tuca. I'll state the obvious. Yeah, we would have liked the breakaways, the penalty shot save. Might be a different game. Their best player, in my estimation, scores a goal. Plenty of time to come back. Right after that, power play hits the post, coil. Maybe it's a different game. We give up the next breakaway. I think that was our, you know, breakdown there. And that was on us as a team. You know, we've been exposed by them on those breakaways. And you give up two, you know, three in a row that period. So shame on us. So I don't want to put this on Tuca. You know, at the other end, I thought their guy was really good to protect the lead and allow them to extend the lead. So good for him. He's a good goaltender. You know, like I said, I don't want to analyze it any more than that.
So there's that Marner penalty shot. Cassidy's thoughts on Rask last night. Rask was not the story, which is the good news. The bad news is Rask wasn't the story, if you follow me. And I was stunned. You know, again, my big thing with Rask is really not Rask, because I think it's pretty apparent what he is. My issue is with those who tell us he's something he's not, and that's the guys that cover the team in the town, I think, is there's this protective net around Rask and this defense mechanism against Rask that I really rail against, is really my beef. The player's fine. He wasn't the story last night. Which why I was stunned to read Fluto Shinzawa, used to write for the Globe. I can't tell if he was a charter member of the Boohoo Tuca crew, but almost all the guys locally, you know, circle the
it's
wagons.
It's like a blood oath.
It is, right? They circle the wagons around Tuca. Joe Hags is like the exception. But Fluto Shinzawa now writes for The Athletic, not the Globe. Fluto Shinzawa's column. He had the whole game to write about. Anything he could have written about anything. Here's what he wrote. Headline. When the Bruins needed big-time saves, Tuukka Rask could not deliver. Whoa. Time to call an emergency meeting of the PHWAAA or whatever and bring this guy to task. He's broken ranks, fellas. Fluto writes, choosing to use his eyes. It's a big ask for a goalie to foil a penalty shot and a breakaway in one period. But when your team fumbles a puck as if it's shaped like a football, the request, albeit unreasonable, is one that an ace has no choice but to address. Tuukka Rask failed to meet it. He said, like we all acknowledge, the goals were not Rask's fault, but, he writes, a confident, brash, take-no-crap puck-stopper.
Puck-stopper.
You're right over there.
Puck-stopper.
I looked at the word and it looked dirty.
You puck-stopper.
But a confident, brash, take-no-crap puck-stopper, however, can turn surefire goals into saves. Frederik Andersen did some of that on the other end. Fluto later wrote, the goalies are not rewarded for style points. The manner in which they pursue pucks, however, can signal the degree to which they're on their game. He says that when Rask is dialed in, he looks so cool and smooth and crisp that he could practically be smoking a cigarette. But on the goals by Marner and Nylander, Rask just looked sluggish. He said there was little frenzy to Anderson's game. Meanwhile, Rask was jumping and sliding and leaning in and out of his crease. He was noisy, busy, active. These are not necessarily good goaltending qualities. Fluto writes that it's not time for Cassie to consider Yaroslav Halak. The tricky thing about a 7-game series, however, is that by the time a goalie change is required, it may be too late.
Exactly. That's the danger.
That's Fluto who did that. Not me, not Felger, not Haggerty, not some caller. That's Fluto who went there. And, I mean, that's just sort of it. Tuukka wasn't the story. And that's also kind of the problem. Again, I hate to just use that cliche there, but that's kind of what I'm talking about. And on the breakaways, again, I think it's reasonable to expect your goalie to stop 2 out of every 3 breakaways. That's the league average. The shootout average at the end of the game is 29%. League-wide, 29%. Penalty shot averages this year in the NHL was 15 of 34. There were 43. Did I say 34? 43. There were 43 penalty shots, which is what Marner got in the middle of the game on a penalty. 43 penalty shots. 15 were scored. That's just under 35%. So 1-3. Rask had three breakaways. Marner on the penalty shot, Nylander, Tavares. He stopped one of them. He stopped Tavares. League average would tell you your elite goalie should stop two of the three, not give up two of the three. And so that's sort of, it's not his fault, but if your goalie's rising up to win you a game, there's the difference.
I mean, the goalie has the edge in a one-on-one. I mean, right? That's, you know,
statistically, he does.
Yeah, by a lot. I mean, by a lot. So the one that bugged me more than anything, he got smoked by Marner. I mean, he just got absolutely smoked. And talk about being defensive. Like, it felt like he was buried in the net, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, Marner took it right down to the freaking goal line, for crying out loud, and then just tucked it in an open net. But the Nylander one, that one can't get in. And that's a big goal.
So, look, the team stunk. The team stunk. The team wasn't ready. And that's the headline. That's the lead story. That's number one on the list. So sometimes what happens in the playoffs is the team stinks, shows up like they're not ready, and the goalie bails them out. And, you know, we expect Rask to do that. I don't think he does that a lot. I don't think that's his calling, his calling card and what he's known for. And so you ran into that last night. But if you're blaming him, I think that that's silly. Okay. Back to the phones on everything. As promised, here's Joe in New Hampshire. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Felger. I can't believe this, but I'm going to agree with you about Tuukka Rask. Boston fans are the worst. You can't possibly watch that game last night and think Tuukka Rask was the problem. And the guy that called earlier who said he can't even not make the saves, that guy's not qualified to watch somebody else make the saves. Thank you.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, it's just not where I start. I don't start with the goaltending last night. Eric in the truck, your thoughts on the Bees last night?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good, what do you got?
So I was just calling to talk about Sean Crowley and Kevin Miller being out last night. I'm wondering if that's going to have an effect on, like, the fourth line. Teams played good without, you know, Pasta, without Bergeron earlier in the season. And, you know, now that they have a guy who's not as high profile as Crowley out of the lineup on that fourth line, I'm just curious of what you guys think of Miller and Crowley being out.
They missed them both. They missed them both. Brandon Carlo sucked last night, and not that, you know, Brandon Carlo would be out if Kevin Miller was in. I'm just telling you, Brandon Carlo sucked. First playoff game looked like it. Charlie McAvoy was invisible. Grizzlick got caught up the ice on the Nylander goal. Charo looked like he was skating in quicksand.
I mean, he was the one that was the most glaring to me.
So
he truly looked his age last night.
If you're telling me Kevin Miller was in there and Grizzlick is out, or, you know,
Clifton.
You guys Clifton. Like, Clifton I liked, actually, but it would have helped. And Crowley, the fourth line was a complete non-factor. Complete non-factor.
And you guys talked to Bob Beers about it yesterday, and he said that that was a concern with those two guys out.
There's no to me, Crowley's a difference maker. Because when that Achari, Crowley, Wagner is going, that line was a big factor for you in the year. And last night, Achari sucked. You know, that line sucked. So, yes, they missed him. No question about it.
I mean, they did miss those guys again, but it doesn't excuse the way they played, though. Could they use the extra bodies? Of course. We know that they're thin everywhere. They don't have a lot of depth. They have any injuries, they're going to suffer from them. But that last night, that was pathetic. That was a no-show. That was a roster-deep no-show.
Okay, Murray's update's right here. We come back, talk more Bruins and whatever else you want on the calls. Bruce Cassidy is going to talk about adjustments and what can he do going into Game 2 tomorrow night.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
But we're trying to get that top line going. You're still in the game. Regular season, a little different than playoffs. You know, you're trying to stick with it. So that's probably the biggest reason. And some of the guys that usually move around, listen, I didn't love their game. So when they're on, I'll move them around, double shift them. A couple of the guys that's happened to in the past, I didn't know if that would have helped them, to be honest with you. some of that in season two ties to get their attention, reward other guys. We're now in the playoffs, right? There shouldn't be attention getting. It's about, hey, let's get out there and be better than the guy across from you. So that's part of the reason that we move guys up and down in the year. But now we want to settle in and get, you know, listen, of course we might move Pasta from one line to another. He did a little bit, but like I said, I didn't think he had his best game tonight. Didn't have his legs under him. So for whatever reason, I just didn't use that club much.
So that's another thing that stood out to me in that game. Cassidy, who is, you know, really willing to switch his lines up and play around with matchups, really did none of it last night. Just sort of rolled the four. And so the big question to me now going into the next game, what adjustments does he make? Does he keep Kuhlman with Krejci? Does he consider dropping Pastrnak? He didn't want to do it during the game, and I get his rationale there. It's not the regular season. In the regular season, you're trying to push a button, demote someone, promote someone, get someone's attention. The playoffs, you shouldn't be having to do that. Now it's about getting the matchups. And he also said he wanted to get that first line going. So why break him up? Let's get it going. And so I see that rationale. I do. But I'd be stunned if they stood Pat. So whether Backes cycles into the lineup or even if he doesn't, do they move a winger here or there? The big thing to me is that Bergeron line that got beat by Tavares and that pairing, that Muzzin pairing. Does Cassie try and keep him away from those guys, or does he say, you should beat those guys? And I'm sort of torn on that. Jake Muzzin, I mean, that was a deadline acquisition from L.A. He's, you know, sturdy guy, was with the Kings when they won cups, so he obviously knows what he's doing, but that ain't no, I mean, we're not talking about Rod Langway out there, or, you know, freaking, am I blanking on the Montreal Canadiens?
Shea Weber?
No, the old guy.
Oh, Larry Robinson?
Yeah, that ain't Larry Robinson out there, thank you. God. You're not talking about some shutdown dude. Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak is the best line in hockey, I thought. They should be getting beat by those guys. So, you know, don't run them off the ice because you're trying to avoid Jake Muzzin. Go beat them. So, I mean, it's one of those. So Cassidy's team was flat, looked unprepared, and he didn't do anything during the game to affect it. So not a good night for him. What has he got in store for night two? That's what I'm looking for tomorrow night.
So I think you start with the first line intact. Okay, it's one game. Like, you don't overreact to it, right? This thing's going to probably go 6 or 7 either way. So, but if you see any similar signs early, then you got to shake it up. And to me, the way to do it is to take Pastrnak off of there. If you put Pastrnak with Krejci, in theory, you are now, you know, closer to even on those two lines. Well, that makes it a little more difficult for Toronto now. So, again, if you're losing with that first group. Remember, the whole idea of keeping that first group together was that you dominated the series with them last year. Dominated. Toronto has no answer. Well, if Toronto has an answer, then you have to change. I mean, that's how I look at it.
Okay, so let's see what Cassie has in store for tomorrow night. Back to your phones, as promised. Jeff in Derry. Go ahead, Jeff. Jeffrey. Okay, you got to turn your radio down, your TV down, however you consume us. Wayne in Grafton, go.
That game last night was an embarrassment. Those wild turkeys on the news had more attack than the Bruins did. And as far as the Red Sox go, you know, they're playing a suck bag team. I know the Red Sox suck right now, but what's going to happen? Watch. Chris Davis is going to have a breakout weekend against the Sox. He gets his first hit. I'm going to drop my pants and whip out my Louisville Slugger. Peace out.
Okay, Wayne. Have a good weekend. Thanks as always.
That really would be something, though. A guy comes in 0-53.
Is he still 0-for?
Oh, yeah.
He is.
Yeah.
0-53.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a hit this season.
Why do they keep playing him? Oh, he's 0-for the season?
Yeah.
He's 0-for the season. This goes back to last year.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's 0-for-32 this year with 16 strikeouts. He's 0-for-2019, literally. Like, it's unbelievable.
That's tremendous.
Yeah.
Ah, that's great. Justin on Route 3 on the Bees. Yes, Justin.
Yeah, so I just, you know, I don't want to come to anybody's defense here, but I like to look at players elevate their game in the playoffs. And I didn't see a problem with Marchand. I didn't see a problem with Bergeron. They were skating hard. The problem was they were playing shorthanded the whole time because Pasta the Drunken Ghost was out there. A cool breeze could have blew him off the puck last night. I've never seen anything that bad. I've never seen him play that bad.
I'll tell you what, terrible. Justin, Cassidy called him out too. Cassidy said he didn't have his legs. But that's fair. So why am I going to move him around like a weapon when he's not even there? They got outplayed by the Tavares line. And, you know, this is what I think you all overlooked the Leafs and Tavares. They go out and sign this guy for this express reason. Last year, the Bergeron line beat up on Austin Matthews, beat up on him, destroyed them. Well, now the Leafs don't have to do that. And throw John Tavares out there, who's an elite, elite player and a pretty decent three-zone player. He scored 47, for God's sakes, almost a 50-goal scorer. But he can play in all three zones and take draws. He won 16 of his 26 draws last night.
He was like 61% from the faceoff circle, and he's a guy that will fight for pucks.
He can take draws. He fights for pucks. He's a legit three-zone player. And so now Austin Matthews isn't out there thrown to the Wolves. It's Tavares. And now it's Bergeron's line against Tavares, a fair fight. And the Bruins lost it last night. And I don't want to put it all on Pastrnak. Bergeron was decent from the faceoff circle, too. But that first goal that you allowed to tie the game was Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak with McAvoy and Chara behind him. And the puck's in the net.
It's your A team.
That's your A team right there. That's your best five. And you got beat by the Tavares group. So that's what happened.
I mean, if their best line beats the Bruins' best line, then that whole secondary scoring thing's really going to get put to the test. Because remember, last year it was that first line. They couldn't stop Bergeron, Pastrnak, and Marchand. The Leafs couldn't stop them.
Here's Tiago and Lowell on the Celts. Go, Tiago.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking the call. I was one of the guys who never wanted to get rid of Tatum, but I did some thinking, and I think that the only way I would actually be able to trade Tatum, and it'll be specifically to the Pelicans, is if they take Gordon Hayward. Since we can't contractually work out another deal that cuts, gets a pay cut or whatnot, get a team that's going to take that much off the load and give us another max slot.
Okay.
And talk KD into coming into us again.
I got you. Good from your standpoint. Why would New Orleans take on Gordon Hayward's contract in a rebuild?
I don't know that they would. I don't think they would.
I don't think that's a valuable chip for
you. No. And the other thing is, I don't know. Are you still sure you want to trade Hayward now? I mean, a month and a half, 2 months ago, it made a difference. Now you look at him and you think he's the most complete player on the team. Really, you watch him play and you say, this guy, he's not.
And it's still been inconsistent. I would sell high.
Okay, I'm just telling you, he looks pretty good lately.
Billy and Haverhill on last night. Yes, Billy.
Hey, it definitely doesn't start with goaltending last night, but Fluto makes a really good point that you need to elevate and pull up your pants and make a big save. And I thought on that breakaway where you let it in five hole that I looked at it and I went, of course you let that in. And it's really deflating. And I think that as a goaltender, especially in the playoffs, you need to make four or five big saves a night. And I think you've seen that in a couple other games this year. And he just, there wasn't a single save last night where I went, that was an excellent save.
Yeah. The story to me is that you needed the goalie to bail you out. That's the story. You needed the goalie to bail you out. And he didn't. Okay, but that's the second thing. The first thing is you needed that. So that's the story. If you play your game, you shouldn't need your goalie to stand on his head. Start with the first thing. Mike in the truck. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, a couple things real quick. I don't put the loss on Tuukka. The rest of the team sucked after the Bergeron goal. Too many turnovers, too many breakaways given up. And can we please stop with the dump and chase crap? I am so tired of that. You can't dump and chase against a team that's faster than you. It doesn't work.
I don't think they're that kind of team. They do it some, but they're not the old dump and chase Bruins. They're a fairly skilled group. So I don't think that's the problem. They gave up too much room to an extremely fast team.
And they didn't take care of the puck.
They absolutely did not take care of the puck.
So look again, that whole takeaway giveaway thing, if you want to put a number on it, the Bruins had, or Toronto was credited last night with 19 takeaways. To me, and the Bruins only like 7-8 giveaways or something, which feels low for the Bruins. But the bottom line is they're both turnovers. Okay, and the takeaways that Toronto had was higher than any team in the playoffs by 50%. Like, it was far and away the most. The Bruins treated that thing last night like a freaking hot tamale. It was ridiculous. They couldn't complete a pass. And against a team like that, if you're doing that in the neutral zone, but between the blue lines, forget it, you're screwed. They're going to turn around and go the other way on you, and you don't have the speed to catch them.
We've got Tom and Quincy with a Red Sox thought. Always good to hear from Tom and Quincy on the Sox. Yes, Thomas.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, this Sandy Leone support is driving me absolutely insane. The guys that call in and say, oh, you know, Cassell can't pitch today, but Leon, blah, 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 all this stuff. Did someone on it? Because today's hit a new low. Because I think I heard someone actually say they brought up Sandy Leone's friggin' war.
Yes, they did. 0.8. He has a 0.8 war. That was brought up. That's
like,
true.
Are you kidding me? Like, analytics are bad enough. I do not need to hear. What does UZR, Maz? Do you know what that is?
No idea.
You know, what's the spin rate on the curveballs he catches? And what's the exit velocity on the home runs that they give? That stuff drives me absolutely nuts. But honestly, Sandy friggin' Leone's war stat. The worst one yet. My God, I wish they would please stop.
Tom, thank you. What's his UZR?
Yeah, that's the ultimate zone rating.
No, but it's so true. The war, the caller did say he had a 0.8 war.
0.8.
And I, again, because he put it in the middle of four different things, so I, of course, forgot about it, but I meant to rant about it. What does that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean? He has a 0.8 war. Like, what does that mean?
I have no idea. It means he's slightly above average for a catcher.
He hits .235. I understand that. He sucks. He hits .310. Pretty good. I'll take him. He stole 40 bags. Okay, he's got good speed. He's a good base runner. I understand it. He had 100 RBIs. Pretty good. Power guy. I understand that. He has a 0.8 war. What does that mean? What does that... I can't tell you a single effing thing about someone if you call me and say he has a 0.8 war.
Yeah, he's better than generic unnamed catcher by 8 points.
Is that what that means? No, 8 points or 0.8?
0.8 points.
What does that mean? Is that a lot or a little? I have no clue.
Seems like a little.
I can't tell you anything about a player if you call me up and say he has a 0.8 war. You know what I mean? Is that good? Is that bad? Is that high? Is that low? Is that close to the mean? I can't tell you a single effing thing. 0.8 war.
You got me. I don't know. And is that just defensive war? Is that
I don't know.
Or is that total war?
I don't know. Oh, God, I hate that crap. A 0.8 war. Oh, God. That's a good way to end the week. Final word comes your way next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio, crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, only one place to go. Town Fair Tire, the best prices and great free services. Nobody beats
Nobody.
Town Fair Tire.
Nobody.
Nobody. All right, two pieces of sound to get to wrap up the week here. It's all put together by Rob Hardy Poole, he of the Midday Show. Let's start with a combo, Mad Mike Squeaky Mavs.
Do we have freshy materials?
This is all fresh material.
Okay, combo. What is the combo?
I don't remember where we started the week at.
Give me a hint.
Red Sox related, maybe?
It is Red Sox related, Mavs.
I don't know.
On the home opener.
Okay.
The game presentation was a little loud. You didn't get the crowd noise, Maz.
Well, what's the point of that? You couldn't hear the crowd, really.
My issue, again, following up from yesterday, is the Patriots being there, but just the Patriots...
But the whole point is to hear Nathan Eovaldi get his applause. To me, it's what the whole thing's about.
My issue, again, following up from yesterday,
so I blame this on nothing.
My issue, again, is no Brady, no Belichick, no Kraft. The craft I get. Two of the guys holding the trophy? Matthew Slater and Joe Cardona.
Well, they're members of the team.
But what's really the point with this now? When you've got the long snapper and the pitcher next to David Ortiz? Is that really the idea here? To put the long snapper next to your Hall of Fame three-time champion Red Sox?
Part of me wonders. Were the Red Sox worried they might get some booze? So they played the music up so you couldn't hear it on your TV?
You're crazy. No Brady, no Belichick, no Kraft.
You couldn't hear the crowd, really.
The Kraft I get.
Well, what's the point of that?
That's great. So true.
Dueling agendas.
Yeah. Just do your thing, I'll do mine.
It's like a piano bar, for crying out loud. Dueling pianos.
And we have a new Mad Mike here. Want to take a guess?
Give me a hint. It all just blends together, man.
Certain caller.
Kyrie.
Certain caller is really starting to get under your skin.
Oh, Mike in Attleboro is just killing me.
Yep. Once in Attleboro, now in Woburn.
That's right, Woburn. Oh, here's another member of the Boohoo Tuca crew, Mike in Woburn. What's up, Mikey?
Do you remember when I came to your defense and I said if there was a potential trade and the price was good enough, I'd have no problem dealing him?
Not really.
Do you know where your buddy Scott Darling is right now?
I don't, Mike.
He's in the minors because he sucked so bad. And that was the guy that you were going to replace Tuca with, right?
Mike, do you want to play this game? Because you wanted to trade Patrice Bergeron and blow the whole team up.
Find where I said trade Patrice Bergeron, because that's an outright.
You said this, you said that, you said this, you said that. We could do that all day long, Mike. You wanted to tank. You wanted to tank the entire operation. So let's just do this. You said you wanted to tank the entire thing. So what are you talking about backup goalies for? You wanted to trade them all and go to the bottom of the league. Nice call, Mike.
Mike, first of all, you're absolutely lying.
You said this, you said that. How many tank calls did we take from Mike and Uber?
A lot.
Endless.
Mike, how many times have you muted me and not let me respond?
That's three.
You said... Whoa! I think Mike and Ruben should recuse himself from any Bruins second guessing when he's the one that wanted to blow up the entire team. Never mind the backup goal. And again, I don't know how you blow up the team when you still have Patrice Bergeron on it. So you wanted to trade Bergeron.
You took a page out of the Kraft playbook right there, the Patriots.
Denied and I accused?
Well, you didn't do the deny part, but you accused, accused, accused.
Yeah. Sneaky, bitchy show today.
You said! Whoa!
Very good.
It's true. We can go backwards and talk about what we said. You want to just call and talk about the team?
By the way, I think it was Maz who wanted to trade Patrice Bergeron.
It's true. It was Maz.
I'm blaming Mike and Attleboro.
Anyway. Baseball reporters, what do we got?
Indeed, Red Sox won last night, came back and defeated the Toronto Blue Jays, dug themselves out of a 5-0 hole. So we're going to go in order, examining the Red Sox victories. We'll get to Nathan Eovaldi, and believe it or not, the biggest bum in baseball's in town tonight, and he's not wearing a Red Sox uniform. We'll talk about him later on in the show,
right.
Too.
Stay tuned to 98.5 The Sports Hub all weekend. We are jam-packed. Bruins, Game 2, tomorrow night here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Celtics, Game 1, Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m., 98.5 The Sports Hub. Bruins, Game 3, Monday night. We'll be on the air before then, but just sort of setting it all up for you. So stay tuned for that action, playoff action over the weekend here on the station. And we'll be back to talk about it Monday at 2. Thanks to everyone. Maz, have a good weekend.
You too, Mike.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.